I'm Karen Given, and it's time for Three Stories You Should Know.
53 points! A new win!
Liz Cambage, last year's WNBA leading scorer, was traded on Thursday, just 8 days before the 2019 season opener. And that's where we're going to start this week. I'm joined by Lindsay Gibbs, sports reporter for Think Progress, and by The Athletic's Michael Lee. Welcome back to both of you.
Thanks for having me again.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Lindsay, fill us in.
Liz Cambage, a 6'8" Australian center, one of the most dynamic personalities in basketball. She was traded from the Dallas Wings to the Las Vegas Aces. This ended a saga that has been ongoing since Cambage requested a trade publicly back in January. This is the culmination of her fighting to show her worth and trying to leverage any bit of power she has to get out of the situation she was in. I think that this is really great news, not just for the league that gets one of its star players back, but also for the embodiment of player empowerment, which is something we usually only talk about in relationship to men's sports, particularly the NBA.
Well, I'm especially happy for her because I know she's had some difficult years. And she wasn't happy where she was. I think it's good for the WNBA, considering the hits that the league has taken with Breonna Stewart being out for the year and with Maya Moore deciding to take a year off. It's important to have one of your best players not only on the floor but also happy and engaged. I hope that Las Vegas is it, because I know it wasn't initially the place that she wanted
yeah,
to go.
Right.
But I hope that she can find some joy and happiness there, and it's good seeing her with another talent like Asia Wilson and seeing what they can do together, because I don't think anybody's going to be able to guard them up front.
Yeah. Lindsay, you talked to Liz Cambage last year at the end of last summer, and she told you, quote, "I don't make that much money here. This doesn't pay my mortgage." And it really, for me, thinking about that brought to light how much the WNBA is taking advantage of many of its players, many women who grew up in this country who feel such loyalty to the league and feel like they have to play for little money, play all year round, because they really want this league to succeed. So I am excited to see a WNBA player who's able to sort of use her power to affect her life positively. It's maybe a trade that's bad for Wings fans, but good for the league.
Yeah, look, the Wings have a lot of pieces now. Skylar Diggins-Smith, their other all-star. She will be coming back from pregnancy. She gave birth about a month ago. She's expected to come back this season, but it will probably be much later in the summer, understandably.
Right.
Take all the time you need, Skylar.
Yeah, that'd be incredible to play a month after.
I mean, we've seen it in the WNBA. These women are ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do think that the Wings, they get to move on now from this as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know she did have a pretty good experience last year with the Wings. I don't think this was anything personal. Vegas is not too bad. And so I think at the end of the day, you know, she's actually a DJ.
She'll find a way to have some fun.
I think that she's going to like Vegas a whole lot, especially since they're such a contender.
Well, I do wonder, we're approaching a new CBA agreement.
Yes.
How does a star player really flexing her power in this way affect that fight?
Well, I hope that it helps them find ways in the contract to give players a little bit more control, right, over their situations. The fact that, you know, she was stuck with a franchise that was completely failing, right, in rebuilding mode after rebuilding mode, I think that they're going to need to get creative with different ways to leverage their power. But there's no doubt about it. Liz Cambage generates headlines on and off the court. She's a fantastic ambassador for the game. It's going to really help the leverage of the players to have a marketable star in a big burgeoning market like Vegas.
All right, Michael, you're up.
The NBA once again placed the fate of basketball's best prospects in some ping pong balls and wind gusts that we call the draft lottery. And this year, the joy of the NBA world was Zion Williamson, a freight train with rocket boosters and a snazzy haircut. And all year, several teams, including the Knicks, made brazen attempts to land Zion despite reforms that made it more difficult for teams with the worst record to win. In the end, the New Orleans Pelicans won the rights to Zion, who didn't look all that pleased with the results and fueled speculation that he would execute a power move and end up in a more desired location. That has since been knocked down. But what's going to happen when one of the best players decides he's done with the current structure? This is an era in which players, influenced largely by LeBron James, are flexing their power and determining their future like never before. And not since Steve Francis in 1999 has a player refused to play somewhere and forced a trade. have a feeling it's only a matter of time before some kid challenges the lottery system, inspires the next big change in the game. My question for you all is, when is that going to happen? And would it be okay if Zion did it?
I mean, I can't really sympathize with anyone not being excited to live in New Orleans. That's hard for me. But I would love to see Zion or any of these players kind of take the system. I mean, we were just talking about Cambage, how she was stuck in a crazy organization because of the draft and the lottery that sent her there when she was 19 years old. It would be great to see the system in flux. And look, players are developing their power. And I think, look, Zion already had such a big following on social media. You've seen players like Luka Doncic who have made names for themselves in the European leagues as teenagers. And I think these are all options that players might be willing to take in order to find a way to have more control over their careers. I do think that we could see it happening sooner rather than later.
I do wonder how much of a deterrent the sort of cautionary tale of Eli Manning is.
That's a cautionary tale? Help me out.
Yeah. In what way?
He won 2 rings in New York?
Let me explain.
Okay.
Eli was the number one pick in the 2004 draft, of course, and he was supposed to go to San Diego. Instead, he demanded a trade, went to New York. So New York is supposed to be where you go if you want all the big endorsement deals, if you want all the money. And Eli never really had the charisma or commercial appeal of Big Brother Peyton. But I do wonder if his refusing to play for San Diego has actually cost him in the end. Cost him in terms of popularity. And of course, popularity results in endorsements.
If I look at Eli's career, he lives in New York, which is a bad, great place to be. And he's won 2 rings and he beat Tom Brady twice. So I think that overall, he made the right decision.
So why aren't more players doing it?
Yeah, I'm surprised because I remember like in 89 or so when Danny Ferry went to Europe as opposed to playing in the NBA. And he instead of going to the Clippers, he wound up in Cleveland. And that worked out for him in some respects. But players just seem to sort of accept that I'll just go wherever I am and I'll be happy.
It's so hard to buck the system, though, right? I mean, you all...
Yeah, there's a backlash to it for sure.
And it takes someone with Zion's level of star power in order to kind of feel like they might even have
that
leverage. Because, you know, these careers are so short and that can inspire them to use more leverage, but it can also make them more afraid of any backlash that will come with it. And look, I'm from North Carolina. I love the Charlotte Hornets and all their messiness and, you know, want a system that does find a way for small market teams to compete for big players, but I'd rather see it them have to compete through developing good talent, through getting good contracts, through making their place a legitimate contender than through kind of holding guys hostage in their careers.
Yeah, I mean, if I look at the NBA Final Four right now, the teams that remain, none of them are led by a former number one pick. You know, the Warriors, everybody was drafted after number five. Same with the Portland Trailblazers. That's a small market. Milwaukee is a small market where all their best players are all drafted after number 12. And then the Toronto Raptors, all their players were drafted outside the lottery. Their top players were. So you can build a good team if you just have smart executives. A lot of teams
The Hornets do not. I will.
That's a big if. That's a big if. All right. I saw a headline this week that made me think, for a very brief second, that the NCAA was finally doing something right. Here's the headline. NCAA working group to consider allowing athletes to profit from names, images, and likenesses. Great headline. Because a lot of people believe that allowing college athletes to sign endorsement deals for shoes, for example, would go a long way to addressing the inequities in the system. But we have to look at the fine print because this is the NCAA. First of all, the press release stressed that the money would not come from schools. Fine, let the money come from Nike. The press release also said that potential payments would be, quote, tethered to education. And it's not totally clear what that means, but it doesn't sound like a fair free market where players are paid cash for what they're worth. So I'm wondering, is this the NCAA trying to distract us? What do you think, Lindsay?
Yes.
Really?
You know, I think it's really interesting right now. We actually have a lot of politicians who are addressing this on the Republican mm-hmm. and the Democratic side. There's a Republican lawmaker from Mark Walker, a representative from North Carolina, who's actually introduced a Student Athlete Equity Act that aims to modify the tax code. So I do think that we're on the cusp of change, but I don't think it's going to come from the NCAA itself without a lot of pressure.
If there's a positive headline for the NCAA, I would definitely view it with skepticism because they have a way of getting everything wrong. And, you know, when I saw the contract that Dabo Swinney got for coaching Clemson, it just made my stomach turn.
Yeah.
Because he was one of the main guys saying that these guys shouldn't get paid. But coaching is not that hard. It's gone on way too far. And the money's gotten way too big for the players to not receive any type of compensation.
Whenever we have these conversations, I get emails or phone calls from people who remind me of how complicated it would be to figure out how the schools pay players and who they pay what.
Do you know how many things are complicated?
Right. Life is complicated.
Let's figure it out. Like, there are plenty of ways to move forward in a not a perfect way. There are probably no perfect solutions here, but in a much, much more equitable way.
My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been Lindsay Gibbs, sports reporter for Think Progress and co-host of the Burn It All Down podcast, and The Athletic's Michael Lee. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.